I'm Nina van Tolberg for BizNews. President Cyril Ramaphosa has emerged from the African National Congress's 55th conference more confident, and he has managed to tighten his grip on power. Instead of hostile members of the REG faction that were hampering his drive to clean up corruption and state capture, the majority of members in the top seven of the ANC of the organization are now allies of Mr. Ramaphosa. In his closing speech, the president said the ANC was able to pull back and managed to prove to those that said the ANC will stumble forever that they were wrong. He recommitted himself to cleaning up government and his party and said the 55th conference, which will conclude in hybrid in January, has united the ANC.
We have not done enough to end corruption, to reverse the effects of state capture, and to deal with the corrosive effects of the ANC and institutions across society. We have stated our determination at this conference to take all necessary steps to address this problem. We know from our recent experience that such actions can be difficult and they can also be painful. We know that these actions may be met with opposition and that they may increase discord within our own structures. But as this conference in the deliberations that we've had has recognized, we have no choice. We either deal with this problem or we perish as an organization.
But will Mr. Ramaphosa be able to abandon his cautious style and speed up the economic reforms he has repeatedly promised? And can we expect a cabinet reshuffle in the new year? I have Professor Theo Venter from UJ on the line to discuss the outcome of the conference, possible cabinet reshuffles, and ask him to predict what will happen to the Pala-Pala investigations. Professor Theo Venter, it was an eventful conference, and it's not even over yet. They plan to reconvene in January.
It's not only an extraordinary conference, but it was an extraordinary 2 weeks before the conference, with several things happening, influencing the conference, influencing decisions. And in your introduction, you mentioned the installments in which they're going to finish or finalize the conference early in 2023. With a hybrid version. Now, when that announcement came, I just thought this is madness, firstly. And the second thought I had was, okay, so if somebody asks me whether COVID had an impact on this conference, I can clearly answer yes, because hybrid was generated during COVID. So hybrid gave them an outcome. It is definitely, I think Ramaphosa is looking far better than he looked 5 years ago. 5 years ago, he made it to the presidency with a very small margin, but he was surrounded by his political enemies in the top structure that was then called the top six. The ANC themselves referred to it as the top six officials. They make up a day-to-day team running the party. And, of course, the NEC, which is currently still being elected, they make up the exco of the party. This time, 5 years later, it seems to me he can at least, it is now the top seven, it's not the top six anymore, but he can rely on at least six of the seven people that has been elected to be loyal to his direction and what he wanted to do.
Well, I think what the business community would like to know is he going to shuffle the cabinet? Kwedi Montashe might have supported him right through this, but he's controversial and he is Mr. Cole. What kind of changes do you expect in the cabinet?
Three or four things are telling me that he will definitely have to shuffle his cabinet. But, and now I'm relying on the Ramaphosa style, which we have by now called the long way or the long style or whatever you want to call it. He's not taking quick decisions. If we look at next year, very early in the year, by the 8th of January, the ANC typically have what they call the January 8th declaration, which is kind of where the party is going. Following that, the next 2 to 3 weeks are several government think tanks. They call them Lekgotlas. And then the Cabinet Lekgotla, which is more a government planning session. And then very early in February, we've got the State of the Nation address. I think Ramaphosa will definitely change the cabinet by then, by the SONA, which is early in February, because he must get rid of Nkosi Zana Dlamini Zuma. What she did in Parliament, I think she cannot stay in cabinet anymore, and the same with Lindiwe Sisulu. And then, of course, Fikile Mbalula, the current Minister of Transport, is now the Secretary General, which is a full-time job for the party, so he must replace him, which is good news, because this guy, Fikile Mbalula, he calls himself Mr. Fix-It and a few other names, say he's the clown of politics in South Africa. I don't think his terms as minister in any of the departments left a big footprint, rather a lot of chaos. And then, of course, Gwede Mantashe, you mentioned him. I think it is time for him now, as a senior member of the ANC, he remains the national chairperson of the ANC. I think it's time to give him a different portfolio. I don't think he works well in energy, and there are discussions that Eskom must be added to energy, which I think will be a mistake, especially if you put everything under Gwede Mantashe. The problem with Mantashe, and I've been working with him, having meetings and discussions and so on and so on. Gwede is of the opinion that he is a masterful kind of political prophet. He knows exactly what goes on, and I don't think that is. I think Gwede is, roughly speaking, my age, and we grew up with candles and all kinds of things. The modern technology is not part of our makeup, and I just hope that the president will also see it that way.
What about Lamola? I mean, he divided the vote for deputy president. What will happen to him? Will Ramaphosa forgive him? Will they make up over Christmas?
There were three people in the election that divided the votes. The one was David Masondo, that stood as one, I think, national chairperson, because Gwede won that national chairpersonship with a few votes, very, very small margin. There was also Lamola as deputy president. If you put his 315 votes that he received to any one of the two candidates, they would have won. So Paul Mashatile could have lost this job, was it not for that third person in the election. And another one was Bajani Chauki at the Treasurer General. But eventually, I think at the Treasurer General, Dr. Gwen Ramakgopa, in my view, is a good appointment. She's a steady woman. She has a lot of experience in government, a lot of experience in the party. And she was, together with two or three other people, really the backbone of this conference, the backbone of getting the administration of the ANC under control again.
Well, if you look at the mood, so what it was rowdy and everything in the beginning, and what it was like when he gave his speech, well, they all seemed just tired and they didn't cheer a lot, but there was no rowdiness. So has the wind now been taken out of the sail of the RET faction? How does it affect what they're going to do next?
I wouldn't call it the RET faction. That rowdiness and that chaos and the noise and everything that happened there, the clapping on the tables and so on, came from about 800 delegates from KwaZulu-Natal. And the KwaZulu-Natal delegates played a very, very high-risk game by putting support into Zweli Mkhize, putting support into two or three other candidates. And then towards the end of the election process, some provinces started changing their allegiance. In the province that I'm situated, Northwest, the leader there indicated that his branches must now vote. The code word was, you now vote for the N3. Now, the N3 is the main highway from Johannesburg to Durban. That is the code for Zweli Mkhize. And the code for Northwest was the N12. So his message to his branches were, the N12 is now going to vote the N3. So if you don't understand those numbers, it would have been chaos. The same happened in Limpopo, where the N1, which goes to Messina, decided to vote for the N3, which is Zweli Mkhize. And in both cases, the leadership that instructed their branches now to change allegiance reminded us of what Didi Mabuza did in 2017, where at the last moment, Mpumalanga voted for Ramaphosa, which gave him the victory. This time around, the branches did not follow the instruction of the leadership. That, of course, is another political implication for somebody like Stan Matabata, the current premier for Limpopo. I think he's going to miss out on a cabinet position. And the same with Nono Moloi, the chairman of the ANC in the Northwest Province. I think he's going to stay MEC for local government much longer before he's going to become premier due to these actions. So although that was political decisions made in the spur of the moment, the long-term political effects we will see unfolding over the next months. But in terms of your question, yes, when the votes came out, KwaZulu-Natal was silent because for the second conference, they don't have a single representative among the top seven. And we may also, when we analyze the 80 members elected for the NEC, I think we will see a similar kind of development where KwaZulu-Natal barked up the wrong tree. And my information is that there is a kind of a blind allegiance, a blind loyalty to old President Jacob Zuma. It is as if he still yields a lot of influence among the branches and among the delegates. And I think the lesson for them after two conferences, when your time is up, your time is up. Move forward, not backward. Something like that. Or like somebody said to me, the problem here isn't the RET. The problem is Zulu nationalism. That's the problem.
I suspect that opposition parties were clearly watching what was happening at the conference and that they were hoping maybe for a disintegration of the ANC. And when you see branches voting against their provincial leaders for Ramaphosa, it was clear they also had their eye on the 2024 elections. What do you think opposition parties are making of the conference?
Well, you'll remember that I said early on that it is a national blessing that Fikile Mbalula is now the Secretary General and not a Minister of Transport anymore. Well, for political parties, it's just the other way around. They're saying, thanks God he's now the Secretary General because he can take that chaos now into the ANC. So now we really stand a chance. I don't agree with that. I think Fikile Mbalula has had a very, very long administrative role in the ANC and substructures of the ANC, like the ANC Youth League and so on and so on. So I think administratively, he's far better placed now as the Secretary General than he was as a minister. And I think part of the decision to get him there is to consolidate the ANC, to get the ANC structures going again in preparation for 2024. I think the ANC is still looking at a very steep hill, a kind of a hurdle to overcome. That's the 50% margin in 2024. But I think with Balula there, they've got a slightly better chance to move towards 50 than to move towards 40. But the challenge for the ANC is not a challenge of leadership. It's not a challenge of who's the Secretary General. It's the challenge of things such as load shedding, service delivery at the grassroots level, the state of the economy, corruption, and those kind of things. They're well established. They are trends. Once they're broken, you will see a change in the voting part. And in South Africa, the voting public has got a very interesting way of responding to these issues. It is not that they take their vote and they vote for somebody else. They just stay away. So your stay away vote, in a sense, must tell you how people feel. And we've seen this again in a by-election just before the conference in a rural town called Lichtenburg, the municipality of Ditsebotla. The average participation rate was around about 40%. So 60% of eligible voters never even turned up. That is typical for a situation in South Africa where a lack of confidence in government is now the big challenge and the big threat to the ANC.
Do you think that opposition parties see them as more of a threat after the ANC conference?
I think they're still upbeat, but I don't see a consolidation among the opposition parties. And even if they consolidate, they will have to move at pace to provide the voter an option. I think it's a good thing that the DA and the IFP has in some way developed a cooperation, especially with by-elections. Herman Mashaba from Action SA and John Steenhuisen had a meeting where they cleared the air in a bit. Those are the things that opposition parties must do if they look towards 2024 and if they want to exploit the ANC's weaknesses.
So it's looking much better for Mr. Ramaphosa, but he still has the sort of pala pala hanging over his head.
Yeah, I think that kind of disappeared. The big decision was taken in Parliament a week or so before the conference. And although there are still reports coming forward, the president also took the report to the Constitutional Court. And I think, personally, that this pala-pala thing will slowly but surely wither away. I think it is just going to disappear somehow in the dust of politics. I do not see, with the current outcome and the support he received from party members, unless the opposition can add something to it. What we can say about pala-pala, it was a serious challenge to his presidency from within the ANC. That's where the challenge came from. Arthur Fraser did not do this on his own. I'm sure that it was done as part of a challenge to his presidency towards the conference. The conference is over. He got elected with an increased margin. I think pala-pala is dead.
Thank you, Professor Theo Venter from UJ.
Thanks.
I'm Linda van Tilburg for BizNews.